Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome today. We have many journeys to take over the next 2 hours, and we hear a great deal about Libya and what is going on there. What we do not hear, what we often leave out of the picture entirely in our discussions in the news here in the United States of America, is what's going on in Africa. And there's a small but an important country, Cote d'Ivoire, that you know as the Ivory Coast. We're talking with this ambassador and a professor who knows a great deal about that country, and we'll be tackling that. We'll look a little bit at Japan, tsunamis, what's happening under the earth, and also talk about public workers and their role in our society and a debate about that. So stay with us for all that. First, we turn this over to our Baltimore listeners to WEAA Traffic to see what's happening on the roads. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Perhaps 400 people, this is Mark Steiner, have been killed in these streets since the beginning of this turmoil. There were women who were gunned down nonviolently in the streets of the major city in this country we're talking about today. And in a nonviolent demonstration, it is being torn apart. There's United Nations presence there, but nobody seems to be able to quell this violence or bring stability back to this nation. And we're not talking about Libya. We're not talking about Bahrain. We're talking about Cote d'Ivoire, that you know is the Ivory Coast. It is in West Africa. This has been going on since the election, and we'll talk about that and all the intricacies of that and why we're not hearing it in our news and why we're not talking about no-fly zones and intervening to save people from being slaughtered. There are even questions here of mass graves of people who were murdered, but nobody can get to them to find out exactly what happened. Well, we'll talk a bit about that as well. We are honored to have in the studio the ambassador to the United States from Cote d'Ivoire, the Ivory Coast, Ambassador Daouda Djobaté. And welcome, Mr. Ambassador. Good to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you so much for receiving here in your studio. I'm very glad, and I just want to greet the presence of Professor
Dr. William Zartman.
Dr. Zartman.
Who is Professor Emeritus at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. And Dr. Zartman, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And I appreciate both of you driving up from Washington, D.C. to join us here live in our studios today.
Okay, thank you so much.
The number here is 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. As many of our listeners have said, the Mother Continent is often left out. It's here in our studios today, so please join us at 410-319-8888 to join in on this conversation. And just a bit of background, because we are not hearing about this in our news at all. There were two men who came to agreement in 2007 to have a fair election in the Ivory Coast, in Cote d'Ivoire. Mm-hmm. And I hope I pronounce his name, Laurent Gbagbo, was the president who lost the election, refused to step down when he lost to Alassane Ouattara. And so that's the beginning of the story at any rate. But let's fill in the blanks about the background to all of this. And as we do that, let me first say, Mr. Ambassador, that I think that I said as you walked through the door that you took a very bold and brave position because you have been in the foreign service of your country for many, many years, serving in Belgium, serving in Brazil, as chief of the cabinet for a while. In Cote d'Ivoire, but when this happened and the election was stolen by Mr. Gbagbo over Mr. Ouattara, you sided with Mr. Ouattara and accepted the position of ambassador in the new government that your country did not recognize.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mark. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to state on Cote d'Ivoire, my country, I can even say my beloved country. We, as diplomats, we are commanded to represent our country abroad, and it happened that I am in this position of representing my country, Cote d'Ivoire, during this very difficult and specific period of the life of the country. As you just mentioned, we have organized election in my country. And that election was a very fair, transparent, and democratic one. For the sake of a best understanding, we should know that the last election that we organized in Côte d'Ivoire was in October 2000. And in Côte d'Ivoire, we usually organize the election every 5 years. We were supposed to organize the following one after the one of 2000 in October 2005. But unfortunately, we have not been able to organize it because, as you can know, the outgoing president who was leading the country, he has postponed the election. And the election has been postponed 6 times. Something that was supposed to be organized in 2005 has been postponed 6 times up to 2010, given an additional free mandate to the outgoing president. It is only in 2010, October, that we have been able to organize the election. But the story is this. You should know that this election has been postponed because of, let's say, the agreement that has been organized with the assistance of the international community. Because when the mandate expired in 2005, October 2005, since we were in a conflictual and a crisis situation, the UN intervened to participate to the adoption of the agreement, through which the mandate has been extended for a first term, giving an additional year to the outgoing president. But unfortunately, during that period, they have not been able to organize the election. So there have been another postponement. And it has been postponed 6 times until we reach the election of 2010. Why am I mentioning this? It means that during this period of postponement, it has given us the necessary parameters and, let's say, tools to better take into account all the necessary measures to make this election transparent, secure, sincere, and democratic. And this has been also done with the assistance of the UN, who has, let's say, a representative in Côte d'Ivoire, mainly the special representative of the UN Secretary General, who, by the way, has been designated by the Ivorian authorities to be the certifier of the election because of the contention between the
which was agreed parties. between the former President Gbagbo and Ouattara, and the others agreed that the United Nations would certify this election, which it did. Because mm-hmm. I read many people were saying, Ouattara, it was just speaking to the world and not speaking to the nation because the world knew about it before the nation did, but that's because the United Nations is the one that certified the election, and that's what broke the news in the world, even before the people in the state-controlled media in Ivory Coast knew. Dr. Zartman, give us some background here to what's going on.
Well, I think that, first of all, the story of the ambassador is perfectly correct. One has to add a couple little details on it. The regular program of elections was disrupted, first of all, by a military mutiny in 99. And then after that, however, the government that came in, headed by a general, General Gay, followed the regular schedule and held the elections in 2000. And the Ivorian people acted in a very mature way. The ambassador said that we needed time to organize elections. But Ivory Coast is certainly mature enough to organize elections, and the Ivorians are certainly mature enough to vote in elections. And in these elections, there were supposedly three candidates, Ouattara, Alassane Ouattara, but he was barred because of his national origin, because of the fact that he was from the north, or I should say his ethnic origin, really. And then General Gay and Laurent Gbagbo. The Ivorian people rejected the general who liked being in power. And instead voted for Gbagbo, who was the only civilian candidate who was remaining. And then he stayed on for the rest of his term in 2005. And since then, he has not been constitutionally in office. He's been in office by political agreements. But it's not because the Ivorians were not able to vote or were not able to organize elections. It's because he very cleverly prolonged his mandate, as you say, for six times. And elections could have been held very well at any one of those times and in 2005. So in 2010, when he finally agreed to elections, it was, one, because he couldn't delay it anymore, and two, because he figured out that he would be able to win by the control he had of the electoral procedure. And he was wrong.
So a little back, I mean, why is it that Mr. Gbagbo will not give up power? And why is it that nobody in the world is able to unseat him with hundreds of people being killed? And there's also been, as I was reading some reports from other journalists who are in Côte d'Ivoire, they have discovered mass graves where hundreds of people may have been murdered, put into a morgue, hidden away, and that, which is evidence of kind of mass killings of people, not genocide, but mass killings of people. Mm-hmm. There's a United Nations force of 2,000 soldiers in the Ivory Coast. Mm-hmm. So how and why is Gbagbo holding power?
Well, why is because he likes it there. and why is because being there in power, he's able to control the possibility of other people taking power away from him. And so he's thumbing his nose at the international community. And he's sticking his finger in the eye of the United Nations, because these United Nations troops, they're more than 2,000. The United Nations troops who are there.
9,000.
9,000.
Yeah. They are harassed. Their vehicles are burned. They are badly treated by the Ivorian army. I don't think, and you may correct me, Ambassador, I don't think any of them have been killed by Gbagbo's forces.
I don't think so.
That would be a line not to cross. But he has absolutely treated them as dirt, and so he's spitting in the eye of the United Nations as well.
And some people have tried to make this into, I mean, the country has been divided.
Mm-hmm.
The northern half of the country, where Mr. Ouattara is from the southern half by the coast, where all the coca trade is going on, and from the port cities out, because the Ivory Coast is the largest coca exporter on the planet.
Yes.
There's also oil, a little bit they discovered, and there may be more.
And coffee.
Mm-hmm. But the people are also trying to kind of break this into a Muslim-Christian tribal battle.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Mr. Ambassador, I'm going to ask you both this question. I mean, one of the things I've read, just reading about the Côte d'Ivoire, is that the country's pretty well evenly divided between Muslims, Christians, and those people who believe in their traditional African religions.
Animist, yes.
Yeah, who are a third, third, and a third. So, and that this really isn't, it's not a Muslim-Christian fight.
No, thank you. No, it's not at all a Muslim-Christian fight. Because, you know, we were happy to have, at the beginning, a head of state, President Houphouët-Boigny, who got the independence for the country.
In 1960.
And who was a man with a very broad vision of what he wanted for his country. He wanted to make of Côte d'Ivoire something like a melting pot, let's say, something like the USA, where everybody is very interconnected religiously, ethnically, regionally. And this has been a very successful policy that the first president has used to make the country assure its development. To give an idea of that policy of openness, you know, in Côte d'Ivoire, you can have up to, let's say, almost 30% of the Ivorian people living in Côte d'Ivoire, coming from neighboring countries, be it immediate or even coming from longer part of Africa, even from many other countries. You can find there even Lebanese, many other French people, all kind of people living there. But the story is that when you arrive in Côte d'Ivoire, you can feel so at ease that you can start straight away your business. And at the same time, we have peace, stability, and business opportunity. This has helped Côte d'Ivoire go straight forward in matter of development, in matter of achievement, and all these things. This has also contributed to reinforce the open-mindedness of Côte d'Ivoire and the Ivorian people. And you can even mention that the item of hospitality and brotherhood as in the national anthem of Côte d'Ivoire. So I can assure you that what is happening in Côte d'Ivoire is not a religious issue, is not a tribalistic issue, it is not a regional issue. It is an issue regarding someone who wants to just grab power. He wants to grab power out of the hand of somebody who has won the election. This election, as I mentioned at the beginning, has been organized very fairly. The global community has invested a lot of money in that election, and they have taken the necessary time to be very patient in the sake of better organizing these 2010 election. I say this because we have organized the first turn of the election, where the turnout was almost 84%, and the Ivorian people went so many to vote because they have a feeling of sentiment fatigue. They were fed up about the killing, the lack of democracy, the lack of rule of law, and all these things. So they really wanted to get rid of that power, that regime, who has only brought bad thing to the Ivorian people, including the loss of dignity, the image abroad, and all these kind of things have been lost. That's why the Ivorian people wanted the change, and they went to vote to change for a new regime, for a new president, and the new president who has been voted by the Ivorian people is President Ouattara, who won the election by 54.10%.
We are in the studio with Ambassador Daouda Diabaté, who is the ambassador from Côte d'Ivoire, the Ivory Coast, to the United States of America, and Dr. William Zartman, Professor Emeritus at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. Hundreds of people have been killed in the Ivory Coast. Women were gunned down the streets in a nonviolent march. Laurent Gbagbo, who is the president, was the president, will not concede power and leave. No one has been able to unseat him. The world is not paying attention to this crisis while we look at Libya and we're consumed by Japan. Not that we should not be looking at Libya and Japan, but we are completely ignore what goes on throughout the African continent and in West Africa and in this country that is a magnificent place, actually, and we're seeing being bogged down in this war. There may also be hundreds, if not more, people who have been murdered by this regime and buried in mass graves, but nobody can get to them. And 410-319-8888, we'll come to these calls coming in. This is Dr. Zartman, again, a little background here. I mean, what the ambassador was just telling us.
Well, I would agree and not agree that it is not a war of Christians against Muslims. But it's a little more complicated than that, and those are labels that are still operative. Let's go back and pick up the description, as Ambassador Djibouti has said. There was this opening of Ivory Coast more than any other country in West Africa to people to come in and share in its riches in this in the system. But at the time of Houphouet Boigny, somebody stood up.
Who was the first president we're talking about of Ivory Coast in 1960.
The one who brought it independence and then brought it a good deal of economic wealth. And there was somebody who stood up against him, a professor at the university, Laurent Gbagbo. And one of his messages was that there are too many of us, and we should be keeping ourselves to our riches to ourselves. That message was then picked up by the successor of Houphouet Boigny, Henri Conan-Bédier, a former economist with the World Bank. And as the economy shrank a little bit and the times became more difficult in the 90s, he decided to make an appeal on the basis of a nationality criterion. He invented what was called ivoirité, Ivorianness. And that Ivorianness was to exclude these people who had come in to enjoy and help build the economy of the Ivory Coast. And they came primarily from the north, and from the north of the country and from countries outside of Ivory Coast, and their religion was Muslim. And so they were identified as northerners or as Muslims. I remember when I was in Ivory Coast, I've been there a number of times, when I was in Ivory Coast in 95, people were complaining, and I witnessed policemen pulling over drivers on what you would call in the United States DWM, driving while Muslim. And they would they'd pick somebody who might look Muslim, that is, look from the north. No, you don't look Muslim, but you
How
look
do you look
from,
like you're from the north?
They're different ethnic.
Dress.
No, not so much dress. A different ethnic background and slightly different in appearances than the people from the south. Certainly all black and all African and so on. But then they'd look at the driver's license. And if the driver's license had a Muslim name, then they would be harassed by the police. And I've seen this, and there were complaints of this by the Muslim community in Abidjan. So then, and it was on that basis of being an outsider that Alassane Ouattara, and that's a Muslim name, an Arabic name, if you will. Alassane Ouattara was blocked from running for president.
He's the one who just won the election.
He's the one who just won the election now. Finally, as during that 5-year period of time, the laws were changed so that any Ivoirian could run for president. So in that sense, it was a... It was a north-south conflict, and it also, if I can go on for one other aspect of the thing, that north-south conflict also is an expression of an economic conflict. People in the south owned land, the land that became the land of the cocoa and coffee plantations. But they were slow in harvesting it. And so they brought in workers, in the 50s, in the 40s and 50s, brought in workers to work the plantations for them. The people then worked the plantations, and Houphouet said, it was funny, he was a real capitalist, but it's a communist slogan, the land to those who work it. And so these people then who worked the land but were newcomers entered into legal land ownership fights, and that particularly in the east, in the west as well, in the Bété territory, and Gbagbo is a Bété. but also in the Akan territory, which is the central part of the southern area, Akan Baule territory of Ivory Coast. So that there is the biggest problem that West Africa and other African states have today is a land problem between traditional landowners and more modern systems of landowners, and that is activated by this influx of people who were willing to work the land and build the Ivoirian miracle.
And these people who came in were from the north of the country.
That's right. Yes. And from other countries around, like Burkina Faso.
Mali, Guinea, Ghana.
Right.
Right. And Liberia is on the other side.
Yes.
Yeah. But not so much from Liberia.
And I'm just painting a picture of what's around.
That's right. And not so much from Ghana, but from the French-speaking territories, Guinea, and then Mali and
Burkina Faso.
Burkina Faso, yes.
Let's go to the phones, if I might. 410-319-8888. Christian, you're on the air.
I was actually interested in having the participants in the discussion talk about the civil war which existed or occurred between predominantly the Muslim North and the South, which I think is a very important prelude to the present crisis. And I don't think Mr. Gbagbo, I think the ambassador and the historian are trying to create the impression that it is absolutely an issue between Mr. Gbagbo and Alassane Ouattara as individual or personality contest. I think it goes beyond that. The politics of Ivorité, which was about national citizenship of being Ivorian, and the ensuing civil war that regionalized the conflict and militarized the conflict, I think is also very important in understanding the crisis between Gbagbo and Alassane Ouattara and the failure of the international community to understand and intervene in a decisive manner so as to bring about Alassane Ouattara's legitimacy, if there is any truth to its legitimacy. I would like the ambassador and the other speaker to actually enlighten us on that very on the prelude to the crisis with regard to the war itself and why these two parties have supporters on a regional basis.
Have supported what, Christian?
Why Alassane Ouattara and Mr. Gbagbo derive their current support again from regional factions.
Uh-huh.
You know, they definitely have domestic supporters in the country. You know, and why is this? If the election was truly free and fair, and if the contest is just about the personality issue between both persons?
That's a very fair question. Do you understand the question?
Yes, I think you're mistaking what we've been saying, both of us. Nobody's saying that this is just between personalities. Certainly Gbagbo's hanging on to the presidency is a matter of power for himself. But the two personalities, if you will, are symbols, and certainly Ouattara is a symbol of a deeper social and economic problem, as the ambassador and I have both been trying to explain. I guess we didn't get across, but it's not just individuals. It's a socio-political question of the definition of nationality, Ivoirité, you cited it, and also of an economic question of land ownership and the movement of people within the country. And these two people are just symbols of that much larger conflict. And, by the way, a conflict, if I can go on from there for one sentence, a conflict that it's going to exist after a legitimate and legal power is restored within the country. Because the land question, the economic question, still goes on, and there will be difficulties in restoring social harmony within the country.
We took a very brief break and come right back to the ambassador to respond as well. 410-319-8888. Leo, you're the next caller up. And we will talk about the difference between Libya and the Ivory Coast. And we'll raise the issue of oil. Even though oil has been the oil research has started and they're taking oil from the Ivory Coast. Exxon is deeply involved in the Ivory Coast. They're saying there's huge amounts of oil off the coast off the coast of the Ivory Coast and Ghana. And Ghana and the Ivory Coast are battling over this oil. And so there's to play it here some more, but maybe other reasons why Mr. Gbagbo does not want to leave power. 410-319-8888 is number here. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We'll get back to our calls and our two distinguished guests. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We're about to continue our conversation about Cote d'Ivoire, the Ivory Coast. As we do, I want to remind you that support for WEAA comes from Morningstar Baptist Church, presenting Go Tell Michelle, Letters to the First Lady, a stage play based on the poems and letters of support for First Lady Michelle Obama, Friday, March the 18th at Coppin State University. Ticket information is available at msbcoc.org/Michelle or 410-727-5516. We are honored to have in our studio the Ivorian ambassador, Daouda Djabate, who is with us here. And as I said earlier in the program, Ambassador Djabate took this post when the civil war broke, when the president, Gbagbo, refused to step down after the former prime minister, Ouattara, won the election. And he stood up for his country and became Mr. Ouattara's ambassador to the United States representing Cote d'Ivoire, and joins us in studio along with Dr. William Zartman, Professor Emeritus at Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, who was brought to us in part by my dear friend and colleague, who considers him one of his many grandfathers, Sunni Khalid, or fathers, I should say. 410-319-8888 is number here. Ambassador, before we go to Leo, did you want to comment on the last caller as well?
Yes. thank you so much. I also want to comment on the question that has been asked to say that I repeat that the Ivorian issue, the Ivorian crisis, is not a religious crisis because I can just mention that we can say that while President Gbagbo was in opposing the Force Nouvelle, those who pretendedly attacked the regime, the leader of the Force Nouvelle,
which is the new forces,
right, is Guillaume Soro. Guillaume Soro is, of course, from the north, but he is a Christian. Guillaume Soro is not a Muslim. Mm-hmm. That is to say that the religious barrier or the religious factor is not the main factor that oppose Gbagbo to the other political opponent. You understand what I mean?
Yeah, you're absolutely.
So to show you that it is not a religious issue, today President Ouattara, who has been elected, his strongest ally is President Bédié, who is a Christian. Mm-hmm. You understand? Mm-hmm. And the prime minister of President Ouattara, who is a Prime Minister Soro, Guillaume Soro, is a Christian. Mm-hmm. So it's not at all an issue of religious preoccupation. It's an issue of politics. You know, Gbagbo has grabbed the power. If I want to be clear, I can even remind that they have been elected in 2000 where Ouattara didn't compete and Bédié didn't compete. Ouattara and Bédié together represent more than 60% of the Ivorian electorate. That is the reality. So they didn't compete. He won against the military, Gay, who was contested, we can say, by the Ivorian people who are fed up about the military regime. It is in that condition that Gbagbo, who has not in front of him this major candidate, won the election. This is the case in 2000. And 2005, there was no election. And today, the election of 2010, this major candidate were able to compete. And let me tell you that on the Ivorian political arena, we have three major political parties. There is the party of Gbagbo, that is FPI, the party of President Ouattara, which is RDR, and the party of President Bédié, PDCI. And these three parties, each of them represent at least, let's say, about 30%. And when 30% for each, and two of them are together, the one that live alone cannot win the election. That is what outgoing President Gbagbo's party discovered, and they were postponing because they knew that they cannot win. That is the situation. So, and let me tell you also that after the first turn of the election, the outgoing president, after having ruled the country for 10 years, he got only 38%. And in front of him, the number two was Ouattara, who got 32%, and Bédié, who is his close ally, got 25%, and they were in a very deep alliance. In addition to that, they have one small party who is also with them. He got 2.5%. And altogether, after the first turn, they have a reservoir of vote of more than 61 or 62%. That is the situation. And it is in that condition that they went for the second turn. They were convinced that they will win. And that is the issue.
I want to get to the phones here, but I also want to get to the point of what do we do now and what is possible. 410-319-8888. First, we go to Leo in Bolton Hill. Leo, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening, Mark Steiner.
Good evening, Leo.
And guests, welcome. We are happy to hear you, and sorry about the conflict, but I guess what I want to know is whenever I hear about black African people who are fighting each other, there's a civil war, no matter where it is in Africa, Ivory Coast or otherwise, I always see the hand of Europeans who provide the weapons and the guns and the ammunition, the munitions, to ensure that the fight goes on, and sometimes that internal fighting, that internecine fighting, works to the advantage of European nations. I'm not suggesting that this is not a legitimate, traditional, historic conflict. I'm not suggesting that because I don't know enough about it to say that there's not some legitimacy in conflict here. But what I am saying is, who's providing the weapons? What countries? The United States? What European countries are providing the weapons being used by the factions to kill each other? Because that's always attendant in these conflicts in Africa. That's been my observation.
That's a very interesting point. What is the role?
Well, yes, I think the arms probably come from, for the most part, from France, because they are arms to the constituted armed forces of the Ivory Coast. These arms have been then taken over by Gbagbo in his position as former president. Arms come around from all over. Particularly after the breakdown of the Soviet Union, there are lots of arms floating around in this world, yard sales of arms left over from the Cold War. But I think that's looking at the wrong side of the issue. That's an epiphenomenal aspect. What's important is that the conflict is among the African participants. They're the ones who are responsible for what's going on, and that there is a legitimate winner in an election who follows the same values that we have of trying to live out the democratic verdict, the verdict of his people. This is not something that one can attribute to outsiders. This is something that is created by Africans, and Africans have to resolve, although outside states now looking in could be doing much more to try to bring a resolution to the conflict.
So go ahead, Ambassador.
Okay. Thank you so much for your question. Yes, of course, you are right to mention that sometimes the Europeans are the provider of the arm, but as Professor just mentioned, in this specific case, we have our responsibility between our hands, because we also in Africa, and particularly in Côte d'Ivoire, we want to be on the side of rule of law. We want to be on the side of transparency, of good governance, of democracy, because we happen to discover also that without these criteria, Africa will never go nowhere. That's why we have taken the necessary time to organize this election, which occurred very fairly and in transparency, to elect a president who happened to be President Ouattara. But unfortunately, the loser said that he is not going to surrender. And in addition, he who is the loser is the one who is killing the people, because the women wanted to protest, to demonstrate, to show, to see their vote to be respected. They have been killed. That is the issue. And no matter from where come the weapon, but the issue is that we have our own responsibility to make our vote and our democracy to be restored and respected. That is the situation. And the question of a weapon, it is a very fundamental issue, but as far as this election is concerned, we want to be assured that the necessary measure will be taken to help the winner to be the winner, in order to respect the choice of the Ivorian people. That's what I want to add. We should not affect everything to the European or the Westerners, saying that they are the one who are making the African fight each other. But we African, we should be responsible of our fate, of our destiny. That is very important. And to do so, we have to respect the rule of law, the rule of democracy, the choice of the people.
Let me go back to the phones. There are a lot of people calling in, and I do want to get to the point about what we do now, and also explore a very touchy subject, which is some people have written around the world, that part of this is about Mr. Gbagbo standing up to the West and wanting to control the oil that is being discovered, and we'll talk a bit about that. 410-319-8888. Baba, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening.
Good evening.
Let me say good evening to my brothers, to your guests. I spend a lot of time in Côte d'Ivoire, in Abidjan, in the 90s, in the early 90s, 91 through 93.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came to Côte d'Ivoire, I heard the term used, Yama Yama. I don't know whether you are familiar. I believe it's possibly from the Mandé people. Gay has been in, when Gay was in power, there was a lot of disgruntledness about General Gay. In fact, in the military regimes that rule now in Africa, I'm glad it's not a lot of them no more, have always been, they will back up whoever pays them. And the military regimes, basically, the military is only supposed to use for war. Soldiers are not supposed to be behind typewriters. It is evident that probably the newly elected president has basically won. And what's going on there, since the losers failed to accept it, then they might find themselves in the same position that Charles Taylor is in for the war crimes that he committed. That's how I look at it. It could go that far, and if he refuses to step down, he may be on his way to The Hague. Take care.
Thank you, Baba. So let me get let's ask both of you right now, what do we do now? Well, before we go to Jones and Jeff and Roberto, which get, try to get all three of those callers in here, what happens now? What is a resolution to this?
Well, I think, first of all, the resolution is this is not a situation where we want to get in and reconcile the two parties and have some kind of sharing of power. One guy doesn't belong there. He's there illegally and needs to be taken out. And the legitimate winner has to be able to give the power and the occasion the opportunity to govern. The first thing I think it's important for Americans is to be aware of this situation. I am for the life of me baffled why we pay so much attention to Libya, where terrible things are going on, and we don't pay as much attention to Ivory Coast, where equally terrible, and one might even say more so, terrible things are going on. The death count in Ivory Coast, now up by the figure that I've heard is 700, was higher than the death toll in Libya, and both of them are going to rise. But there's a serious massacring situation that's going on in that country. There's a legitimate principle of democracy that we're should be concerned about in Ivory Coast, as the ambassador has said. That principle just isn't on the table in Libya at the moment. So I think it's important that we be aware of what's going on. I think it's important that the newspapers pay attention to it. But as you've noticed, Ivory Coast is off the pages because it's old news and we don't pay attention to it anymore. We need to demand that we get more news. And that's why I think this program, the Steiner program here today, is so important. There are things that we can do in this regard. First of all, we could easily put a ship off the shore of Abidjan and jam the radio and television of the government that's been used to arouse inter-ethnic hatreds. We know from Radio Mille Collines in Rwanda that this is a powerful tool in the hands of those who want to push their partisans to kill other members of the their country. And we have every right to jam, in this case, these radio broadcasts and television broadcasts that are so important to Babu. Second of all, we've heard of blood diamonds. We ought to be labeling blood cocoa and blood coffee and blood timber. That is a products of the country whose income is being appropriated to support the illegal regime there. The cocoa crop has already been, of this past year, has already been sold, but still labeling, and it won't be 100% sure, but labeling these products, as long as they're in the hands of the usurper of power, as blood products, would be very helpful. And then we've got to take some pre-military measures, such as moving neighboring troops to the borders, moving the Force Nouvelle, the new forces, to the what's called the zone of confidence between the two parts of the country, to show Babo that we're serious in pointing out to him that he doesn't belong there.
Let me go back to the phone, Special Ambassador and Dr. Zarin. 410-319-8888. Jones and then Jeff. Jones, you're on the air.
Yes. So first thing is, let me introduce myself. I was part of the conflict in West Africa. I understand Ivory Coast and Liberia. Originally, I'm from Liberia. There is a problem. I think the two speakers missed the point. The key point is, Ouattara is a very good man. Everybody loves him. The point is, Ouattara is a victim of tribal exclusionism. The tribe that Ouattara comes from and the religion he comes from is the one that is victimizing him. Here is the problem in Africa. If you remove back from there today, the problem is going to continue. What happened is, in Africa, there are a lot of people from other countries that went there to settle, including people from my own country, Liberia. Those people go there and they have their kids and everything. Those people during the days of President Ufuor Ponye, those people had the same rights like any other Ivorian. But with people who are Muslim, they could not socialize in terms of marriages and different things. They excluded themselves. You know, they excluded themselves from the rest of the other tribes. So intermarriage was a major problem.
and then some of them could go back to their original countries and still hold political power. Example, Sidi Touré was a cabinet minister under Ouattara when he was the prime minister. After a while, he went to Guinea and became prime minister of Guinea. But an Ivorian cannot come from Ivory Coast and go to Guinea and become prime minister. So the Ivorian, they are trying to... this is about identity. This is about having solidarity with your country. You can have people coming from all over the world and claiming your citizenship, and then you can go to the US and claim citizenship. Predominantly Muslim countries do not allow Christians from other countries to become citizens. Guinea is one place. You cannot come from Liberia and go to Guinea and want to hold political power. But Guineans want to go to Liberia and hold political power. And that's one of the conflicts today in Liberia, in Ivory Coast, in Sierra Leone, and even Nigeria. So the Muslim population in Ivory Coast, they have to assimilate. As soon as they assimilate, that problem is going to be resolved. But the problem is not between Ouattara and Gbagbo. Ouattara had that same problem with previous head of state in Ivory Coast.
Jones, we're almost out of time, and I do appreciate the thought. I think you raised an important issue. I think that there are a lot of subtext to this conflict that I think Jones brings out. But let me get another call in here. I'll go right back to the ambassador. Jeff, you're on the air. Jeff, you there?
I just wanted to say that I think this is a great program and maybe even need another hour. But I think we all need to accept the total legitimacy of Ouattara in winning the election and the total non-political legitimacy of Gbagbo. Now, the question remains is how can really Gbagbo, besides his hubris, remain in power? There must be people behind him, not just the ministers that he has lined up in those pictures behind him, who are supporting him. And we need to look at the main power, foreign powers, who are in France. Now, the problem about France now is the France-Afrique is now atrophying and France's influence is decreasing, and it's very easy to Gbagbo to play the card. We don't want to have the French have any say. Well, we don't have any say what the French have to say, but now in America, we have a say as to what our foreign policy can really be, and particularly directed at the Ivory Coast. So my question is, now that they've discovered
oil,
offshore oil, and Exxon is now taking an increasing part, my understanding is that Gbagbo,
Jeff, we're almost out of time. You have to come right to the point.
Gbagbo signed oil leases with Exxon. What's going to happen to those if Ouattara comes in power, and how is that changing the situation, and what can American foreign policy do?
Thank you. We only have like 2 minutes. So it's difficult to answer that question. We don't have much time. Mr. Ambassador, you want to tackle that very quickly? We only have like 2 minutes.
Only 2 minutes?
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much. I will start by answering the first speaker.
We just have 2 minutes, though.
Within 2 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll go right to the second point. For the signing of the contract signed by the outgoing president, we should have in mind that in matter of state, in matter of government, it is what we call the continuity of the state. If outgoing President Gbagbo has signed a very huge contract for the country, the new president, of course, will continue. So they don't have any fear about it.
So, we didn't have a chance to really explore. And I think that I maybe should start with this rather than end it with this, is the question of oil and the power oil plays. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've read in articles today that some people argue that Gbagbo was trying to stand up to the oil companies and that that the new president is just Ouattara is just working for the oil companies. And I've heard the exact opposite in other articles. Whatever the truth is, that oil is playing a role in this at some level.
Yeah, oil is a source of wealth and power for whoever sits in the presidential chair and governs the country. The question, therefore, the oil is there. The question is, who is the legitimate occupier of the presidential chair?
The man who won the election is Mr. Alassane Ouattara.
Voilà.
Yes, the winner of the presidency is Alassane Ouattara, who won the election and is the president. He's the one who will continue managing the business of the country. So they don't have any fear about it.
Mr. Ambassador, this, yes. It's an honor to have you here. I deeply appreciate you coming all the way from Washington to D.C.
Okay, thank you
so
much.
We'll follow up on this with you.
Okay.
Our guest, Ambassador Daouda Diabaté, the ambassador from Cote d'Ivoire to the United States of America, who stood up for the man who won the election against the other government, who is now the ambassador, even though we haven't talked about the conflicts he faces, even inside of his own embassy.
He
is here.
You.
And Dr. William Zartman, Professor Emeritus, Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, thank you so much for being here as well. And pleasure to meet you, and I'll say hello to our dear friend Suni for you.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. We're going to take a very brief break and come back to the United States of America for the next part of our show to look at what's going on, not just in Madison, but around the country with unions, and especially public employee unions, and then have a conversation about what is going on in the earth and why so many tsunamis are taking place. We'll be back. Stay with us.